From Silicon Valley to Wall Street, the promise and perils of artificial intelligence are playing out on the world stage. But what will the next phase of AI adoption look like? Which companies, from big tech to startups, will dominate? And where do the risks and unintended consequences lie? I'm Emily Chang. Join me at Bloomberg Tech in San Francisco, May 9th, to answer many of the industry's burning questions, alongside Snap's Evan Spiegel, Xbox President Sarah Bond, OpenAI's Brad Lightcap, top researcher Dr. Fei-Fei Li of Stanford, and many more. More details and just a few tickets left at Bloomberg.com/TechSF.
This is Bloomberg Business of Sports.
We're in a situation that we haven't dealt with in modern times.
The pandemic here has really accelerated the investments that we've been advocating for years.
From a macro standpoint, I think our sport industry is really forced to look at the business a little bit differently.
In-depth conversations with the leaders in the sports industry.
Esports is a good aberration. We're still moving forward.
We're part of something much bigger than sport right now. The health and safety of our stakeholders is what's most important.
Every moment, I think we're all, from a business perspective, thinking about the impact that the virus is having across the country.
Bloomberg Business of Sports from Bloomberg Radio.
Hi, everyone. I'm Jason Kelly.
And I'm Mike Lynch.
And this is the Bloomberg Business of Sports podcast. We explore the big money issues in the world of sports, on the field and off. Today, a fantastic guest who has a lot to talk about of late and across his widening portfolio. Talk about Super Bowl champion Ndamukong Suh. Ndamukong, really nice to have you with us, and congratulations.
Thank you very much. It's been a pleasure, and I'm glad to be back on Bloomberg.
Yeah, well, a whirlwind for sure. Talk to me first about, before we get into like the deep business stuff, I got to ask you, you know, winning your first ring, your first championship, what does that mean for you sort of as an athlete? And I guess, what does it mean to you, you know, in the context of the broader things that you're trying to accomplish?
Yeah, I think it means the world to myself and my family. It's been something that we've been striving for and for many, many years. And obviously, at the older you get, the tougher it kind of gets, just or from that particular window, depending on who you are. And even though I feel like I got a lot of time left to play in the NFL, it's something, an ultimate goal, because I've been super blessed to have a ton of individual accolades from all pros and Pro Bowls and things of that nature. So it feels that much better to win the ultimate team reward and a Super Bowl championship.
And Ndamukong, it's Mike up in Boston. Really great to talk with you. I've talked with so many NFL players, and they talked about the importance of having a ring on their finger. Now, you're a Super Bowl ring I'm talking about, and you're a guy who has multiple business ventures, and they said it makes a huge difference when you go to close a deal, when you go in for a loan, when you go in to put a group together. Having that ring on your finger, it just has a psychological impact. You've had yet to experience that yet, but is that something that am I getting warm or getting hot on some type of idea here?
Well, I hope it's true, because I look forward to having the opportunity to have those experiences now that I finally accomplished that goal. And truthfully, I would imagine so. Just thinking about realizing people saying, oh, you're obviously a champion, you understood the trials and tribulations to get to where you are and found ways to reach success. And so I think the people out in the world that say, all right, you're a champion, you know ways, know how to be successful, and you're not going to particularly fail in the endeavors that you choose to do outside of the field.
And so when you think about putting together your portfolio, you know, as we've sort of dug into it, it has evolved and widened over the past few years, that's for sure. And as you look at sort of your investments in the hospitality business and consumer retail, and you're like so many people out there involved in a SPAC, we'll get into all of that, but give us the overall kind of ethos. What's the design as you think about putting together Suh Inc., as it were?
Yeah, Suh Inc., and that's a great way to put it. It has definitely broadened and gotten bigger and more ambitious over the years, just from the standpoint of my exposure to so many different things and the ability to understand that I can help in a lot of different ways. And that's where I really kind of pride myself. I went to school for engineering, and I run to my family with my dad being a mechanical engineer. And I was primarily focused on the construction management side of things. And that's exactly what I'm getting into now and what I have with my development company, and real estate being one of those pieces that I believe is very important in anybody's particular portfolio from the standpoint of generational wealth. And then having aspirations in the hospitality world, I didn't get this big without eating a bunch. So I feel like I know food pretty well. And in addition to that, I've got amazing partners that I work with and find ways to be creative, to create different concepts, as well as be able to have just strong relationships. You mentioned being a part of the SPAC, which I was very proud of, and having that opportunity to be a part of FAST with Doug Jacobs and obviously here soon with Tillman Fertitta. So I'm excited about all the opportunities that have been afforded to me, but also at the same time, I know that I'm going to continue to add value to each and every single endeavor in my own particular way so they can reach success and beyond.
And Domica, now that you are a Super Bowl champion, more people are going to be coming at you with business ventures, investment opportunities. How do you filter the haves and the have-nots and the phonies and the frauds from the real deals?
Yeah, that is a great question. There is filtering through deals is one of the most difficult things, especially when, like I said, I've had a lot of exposure, and so my pipelines are pretty deep. But when I look at it from my perspective, a lot of the deals that I get involved in are either close relationships, whether that's Andreessen Horowitz or General Atlantic or L. Catterton or MVP, Marcy Venture Partners with Jay Brown and Jay Z. So having those kind of as my core guys, and then obviously from the real estate perspective, I've got a great mentor in Gary Schiffman out of Sun Communities with a REIT that he that's a publicly traded REIT that's amazing and continue to grow at an astronomical standpoint. And so those are kind of my core ways of getting involved in certain particular deals. And then as I take things inbound, it's usually coming through a vetted source. And if it's not, then I really just have the opportunity to have a team with me, where that's my counsel that I have in-house and or some of the different people that I have that I work with on a day-to-day basis, the Todd Perrys of the world, and obviously a lot of people know of my relationship with Mr. Buffett, so I get to bounce things off of him as well. So just overall have a strong, a lot of connectivity to be able to vet through things and different opportunities that come across my desk.
And Tom, talk to me more about sort of the private equity and venture capital side of this, because you have distinguished yourself in that regard, because I don't think, you know, we talk to a lot of athletes, current and former, about their business empires and their relationships, but, you know, really locking into that investment asset class in some ways, the, you know, growth equity in terms of GA and certainly VC with Andreessen Horowitz. I mean, these are gold-plated names, some of the best in the business. How do those relationships come about, and how do you sort of cultivate them?
Yeah, those relationships, a lot of them come through, really, I'll give you the best example. I was playing at the time in Miami, and Mr. Stephen Ross, our owner there, a great human being, had the opportunity the first time I was there to shadow him and related. So I have a strong relationship there, and that expanded, and he has strong relationships with Mr. Ford for General Atlantic. So I got to shadow him and build and just learn from that perspective. And that's really how that relationship cultivated. Then moving over to Andreessen, I got to meet one of the partners there, a very smart guy, and Jeff Jordan, and sit in his office and talk to him about a handful of different things, and also had some other strong ties via Stanford that connected me into those particular realms. And so it really, a lot of these relationships, I identify them and say, hey, this company's been doing tremendous, have a tremendous track record. I want to understand how they've gotten to that track record, and really just go in there from a learning perspective. And then obviously from that standpoint, I built relationships with the different folks with no real agenda. And then obviously you have the opportunity later on as you've gotten to know folks and they get to know you and know that you're a real person and really have the ability to not only be an athlete, work that 9 to 5 or 10 to 6, whatever it may be, but then on the flip side, still be able to communicate, respond to emails on time, be able to maneuver during the normal working hours. And for me, I really don't kind of sleep on the weekends. For myself, I'm working on the weekends as well. So just seeing that you're a real person and that you're not, I guess, a typical athlete that just kind of focuses on just their sport, which isn't anything wrong with that because football and or any basketball, any other sport is very difficult. But I like to broaden my horizons and be able to expand and be able to have a bigger workload. And that's something that I feel like my parents afforded to me.
You know, that's the question I was just going to ask you. No disrespect to many of your teammates, but while some are sitting around the couch playing video games, you're job shadowing your boss, Mr. Ford, Mr. Ross. And so where did this curiosity to sharpen your business acumen, where are the origins? I think you just tipped it off, your parents, right?
Yeah, for sure, my parents. And my parents always taught me really just the focus to be able to, whatever you want to accomplish, you got to go out there and get it on your own. And that watching them and hearing the stories of how they grew up, my mom from Jamaica, my dad from Cameroon, and then making their way over here to the U.S. In their own particular ways, I see it no different than me being even first generation here. There's still a lot of work for me, even though I was afforded a lot. And so the curiosity truthfully came from them and just watching myself grow up and cutting lawns as a little kid for their rental apartments. And then as I've gotten older and gotten into the league, like I said, Gary Shiffman was my real heavy dose of real estate and how I can expand and seeing all the different types of markets of real estate, and got to sit in his office. And he really took me under his wing and showed me how I could expand and grow outside of football. At the same time, he always pushed me to be very cognizant of my sport, make sure I take care of business there. But at the same time, you have the capacity to do other special things. And so that's really where I owe a lot to him, let alone my parents as well.
From Silicon Valley to Wall Street, the promise and perils of artificial intelligence are playing out on the world stage. But what will the next phase of AI adoption look like? Which companies, from big tech to startups, will dominate? And where do the risks and unintended consequences lie? I'm Emily Chang. Join me at Bloomberg Tech in San Francisco, May 9th, to answer many of the industry's burning questions. Alongside Snap's Evan Spiegel, Xbox President Sarah Bond, OpenAI's Brad Lightcap, top researcher Dr. Fei-Fei Li of Stanford, and many more. More details and just a few tickets left at Bloomberg.com/TechSF.
And so, Indomica, you know, tell us about the hospitality business because, you know, you, like the rest of us, have seen it just absolutely crushed over the last year in this pandemic. What were the decisions that you made, or what are some of the things that you saw, you know, especially as I think about the SPAC and the merger with Vertita that you mentioned earlier? You know, how are you looking at the hospitality business right now?
Yeah, the hospitality business has obviously took a major hit because of the pandemic. And I think early on, people saw a lot of negative pieces. But I think when you have creative ideas and great concepts and you have the ability to be nimble and flexible with understanding that people were getting tired of cooking at home and running to the store first thing in the morning like my mother did and then coming back before the huge rush came in and just to have their groceries, people wanted to start to eat out. A little bit, but that eating out looked a lot different from you going into the particular restaurants and more or less a lot of takeout. So you got to ramp up your takeout aspects. But then just like any other business or any other silo, there's ebbs and flows. It's going to be, they're going to hit very high peaks and they're obviously going to be able to come down. And if you can weather some of those storms, especially if you look at the assets that Tillman has in some of those pieces, I think there's a lot of great things that are going to bounce back. And it's just a matter of time and cultivating and fine-tuning them to get them focused for the consumer and how they've kind of changed and adapt and then be able to come out ready to serve and really be hospitable.
if I may. Yeah, it's funny you bring that up, Duncan, because I know the General Atlantic guys pretty well, and Bill Ford specifically, and he and I have spent a ton of time talking about Torchy's Tacos, you know, as like a great example of that pretty substantial shift that they've had to make to delivery and pickup. And I think all in all, they have not actually seen their business diminish, but the shift in terms of on-premise versus off has obviously changed dramatically and may not sort of swing back. So I would imagine that as you think about the hospitality business and especially the food business, you may have a different sort of, to use a term Lynch used earlier, sort of a different filter as you think about investments going forward.
Yeah, no question. And really, when you look at it, it's like, do these companies have the ability to do that and are willing to change versus saying, no, this is our mold, this is the only way we're going to kind of focus. And then you look at drive-through concepts and you find ways like, how do I make it look, I'm going to have probably a smaller indoor space and bigger outdoor. At least here in Portland, I know there's a lot of outdoor opportunities where they've closed down streets and the city's been very flexible with a lot of different things. So just understanding the municipalities and how they want to function when you want to dive in a little bit deeper and look from a high level perspective, but then obviously look from a very focused anticipation of how things are going to particularly move and where they're going to move to and being able to adjust and adapt.
All right, Indomica, I'll be the guy talking about the elephant in the room since I'm up here in Boston, and we haven't brought up Tom Brady's name once in the last 17 minutes. His impact on your team. Obviously, we saw the final results. We saw that you're a business guy. The bottom line is all that counts. But getting to that bottom line, how much of an integral part of the success of that team was Tom Brady just changing culture and add anything that we haven't been able to figure out for ourselves?
Yeah, I think Tom was a big part of it. And I think especially from the offensive perspective of him being able to kind of come in there, take the reins, dial in those particular guys and how they wanted to run the offense on that side of the ball. And really, when you look at Tampa, how I looked at them when I decided to make a decision to move over there in 2019, that team was loaded with talent. Mike Evans, Chris Godwin, Rojo, and then you add all the additional pieces with obviously Gronk, Tom, AB, Leonard Fournette, and then you turn around and look at our defense and having number one rush defense, and then obviously we struggled in pass from a perspective of our young guys just needing to grow up a little bit, which they did a tremendous job, and I'm proud of each and every one of them on the back end, and that's why we got to where we were of being able to win a championship. The talent was there. It was just about cultivating it, putting it together, and everybody getting on the same page. And those are the continuous conversations that we have as veterans for myself, what Tom brings, because he obviously has the expertise of winning championships and being able to infiltrate the entire team collectively as a veteran group and making sure everybody from the 53 man on the roster to the number one guy on the roster, everybody's on the same page. And VA did an amazing job of that. And so that's where I think we found our success, and that's where we're fortunate enough to get to where we are and be able to play for a championship, let alone win it.
So I know you're in the midst of a lot of delicate decision-making, and we'll be respectful of that. But, you know, talk to us a little bit about the business of, you know, sort of the football business side of Sue Inc., as it were, and how you approach in general sort of contract negotiations, thinking about your career, because that obviously is a big part of the broader business of you.
Yeah, without question. And I enjoy the business side of football and really have taken a big liking to it, especially before I moved to Miami. I took my third, fourth, and fifth year in Detroit to really start to understand the contracts, the different pieces from that perspective, also understanding the cap, also understanding cash over cap and teams being able to be flexible if they really want you and finding ways to do it. And so it's just a matter of if the stars want to be aligned, they can be aligned. And it's about people understanding, working together to create that. And so the more educated I got throughout the process of being more involved with my agents and then now being in a position to where I can represent myself is really exciting. And from my perspective, contracts are no different than any other business deal. It just happens to be in the sports realm versus in the real estate realm or hospitality realm or anything. They're all the same. And it's about crafting something that fits for both sides and making sure that both sides can be happy with what was agreed upon.
Domkin, when you're in season, how do you find time to be such a business entrepreneur and also be an all-pro caliber football player? Because we all know that football, once the camp starts in July, it's a 6 or 7 month commitment. Do you block out one day a week where you say, okay, this is my time, I'm going to be talking with Gary Shiffman or somebody else about some of my investments? I mean, how do you discipline yourself?
Yeah, I think you said it there perfectly. It's discipline, but let alone a great ability to compartmentalize things. And so for me, Mondays and Tuesdays, I'm really heavy on business and really have the opportunity to take phone calls as well as Zooms or whatever it may be in this particular day and age. And then obviously from a football perspective, it's really Wednesday through Sunday. But we have times throughout the day where we have dead periods. Like we usually, for our particular team in Tampa, when we're done with practice, we probably got an hour and a half, 2 hour window before we start meetings again. Individual meetings to watch practice film, things like that. So I'll take calls between that time frame or on the way home. Can throw on my Bluetooth in the car and listen to a call or take a call, whatever it may be. And obviously have time in the afternoons outside of treatment, which typically happens for me on Thursdays and Fridays. So I think there's a lot of flexibility. And then some people understand it. I'll take calls on Saturday because on Saturdays we're in the office for a short amount of time. It's usually unless we're traveling, and even when we're traveling can be flexible. We're usually just in Saturdays from 8 o'clock in the morning to 11, and I've got the whole rest of the afternoon to do things if I so choose or catch up on email. So I think people realize that, yes, football is very, very demanding, but at the same time, we do have a good amount of off time where you can be very flexible. And especially people understanding that you do have a main job, they work around your schedule as well.
And it's interesting. This sort of takes us back to the beginning as we wrap up to some extent. But, you know, you talked about your own evolution across 11 years in the league. It does feel like, and I think Lindsay would agree, that we have seen an acceleration in terms of the business acumen and the business ambition of a lot of pro athletes, not the least of which, you know, in the NFL, you think about some of your teammates, you know, both in Tampa, the aforementioned Mr. Brady and others, you know, who become very serious about their businesses while they were playing. This is not the days anymore of, you know, I'm going to play and then after that I'm going to worry about, you know, being a businessman. What do you think, you know, as you've talked to people, sort of precipitated that? Why did that happen for you, and why has it seemed to have happened more broadly as we look at pro athletes?
I think there's a two-prong approach on this, and it's one of the two silos in my particular opinion. One is kind of a focus of guys saying, hey, I want to have the ability to do marketing deals and earn equity and do different things from that perspective, which is typical in the offseason for guys to do, especially being able to do it with smaller companies and kind of use your name and likeness from that aspect. But more so for myself, because I've kind of pushed away a little bit from marketing, even though I still enjoy it and enjoy doing it and having fun with it as well, and being able to have some of those relationships and continue to grow. But also, I want to be able to have something. As soon as I decide I want to be done playing football, I want to roll right into my next gig and not really have a lull period. Or if I choose to have a little bit of lull period, it's my decision, and kind of things are already on autopilot outside, so I don't have to kind of worry about, oh, what's my next focus in life after I get done playing football? Because I think that's where you see a lot of people struggle and where they have issues with family as well as just financially. They didn't really have a plan leaving the game or the sport and saying, all right, I'm going to transition into this. And that's where things usually fall through the crack. And there's a lot of struggling until obviously they get back on their feet. And so I think that was one of my main focuses. It was like, football can be taken away from me at any point in time, God forbid, any particular injury or anything of that nature. But I want to be able to have a plan, and I want to be able to use my brain to eventually be more successful off the field than I was on the field.
Indomica, thank you so much. It was really great to catch up with you. Congratulations again on the big win, and congratulations even more widely on all the success you've had. It was really cool to kind of dig into this ever-expanding portfolio, and you are far from done, it sounds like, both on the field and off. So it's nice to see that ambition really take hold. So we appreciate you spending some time with us.
No, it's always a pleasure to talk to you guys, and I look forward to another opportunity here in the future. And thank you again. It's been amazing to be able to be a champion. I'm going to soak it up for the next 3 or 4 months and then pass it on to the family, let them take all the honor, and hopefully have an opportunity to go win another one.
Yeah, there you go. Well, you guys are odds on. Odds on. You're looking good. This is the Bloomberg Business of Sports podcast. I'm Jason Kelly. You can follow me on Twitter at Jason Kelly News.
And I'm Mike Lynch. That was a fascinating interview. You can follow me at LynchyWCVB.
And we're here each and every Monday, Wednesday, and Thursday exploring the world of money and sports. Join us again at the end of the week. We're going to talk with Ben Sherwood. He's a former president of ABC, now the CEO and founder of a company called Mojo. Has to do with the very, very big business of youth sports.
You're listening to Bloomberg Business of Sports on Bloomberg Radio around the world and online wherever you get your podcasts.
The countdown has begun. From May 14th to 16th, 1,000 global leaders will gather in Doha for the Qatar Economic Forum powered by Bloomberg. Join heads of state, influential ministers, and leading CEOs to make new connections, gain unique insights, and uncover valuable opportunities in one of the world's most rapidly rising regions. Request your invite for this exclusive event at QatarEconomicForum.com.